Okay, so we're talking about the kings of the Jews, and basically we've had where we've come from. We had the first king, who was Saul, who turned out to not be a good king. We had David that God brought in to replace him, who is a man after God's own heart, and then we had Solomon, who was his son, who came in after that. And Solomon was he had some good and some bad, but basically towards the end of his life he deviated off into some things we talked about last week, you know, in terms of some idolatry, basically catering to his 700 wives who had different, you know, came from different countries and different cultures and worshipped idols. And as a result of that, God sent a prophet basically saying he was going to take the kingdom away from Solomon, but not in his lifetime, but in the lifetime of his son. So that's where we are today. We're going to start basically with 1 Kings 11. We're going to talk about, kind of review real quickly, and starting in 1 Kings 11, verse 9, says, "The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. So the Lord said to Solomon, 'Since this is your attitude, and you have not kept my covenant and my decrees which I commanded you, I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your subordinates.'" Okay. Verse 12, he says, "Nevertheless, for the sake of David your father, I will not do it during your lifetime. I will tear it from the hand of your son. Yet I will not tear the whole kingdom from him, but will give him one tribe for the sake of David my servant, and for the sake of Jerusalem which I have chosen." As you know, he had made a promise to David that he would always have a descendant sitting on the throne. He promised him an everlasting dynasty. Okay, and that was because David had been a man after his own heart. Yes, David sinned. He repented. And God's assessment of him was that he was a faithful servant, faithful king. So he's going to divide the kingdom. He's going to take part of it and give it to somebody else. Now, who would that be? Well, he chose a man by the name of Jeroboam. Starting in chapter 11, verse 29, 1 Kings 11, 29. "About that time, Jeroboam was going out of Jerusalem, and Ahijah, the prophet of Shiloh, met him on the way, wearing a new cloak. The two of them were alone out in the country, and Ahijah took hold of the new cloak he was wearing and tore it into 12 pieces. Then he said to Jeroboam, 'Take 10 pieces for yourself, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. See, I am going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. But for the sake of my servant David and the city of Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, he will have one tribe.'" So, I mean, if you've got the question in your mind, you know, 10 tribes, one tribe, I thought there were 12 tribes. What was the 12th one? It was the Levites. And, of course, they were scattered among the 11 tribes, you know, serving in the, you know, basically the law, serving the worship duties in all the different tribes. So they were dispersed. And we'll find out later that there was even others that came over to Judah later on, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But basically, God said he's going to tear 10 tribes away from the son of Solomon and give him to Jeroboam. Verse 33 continues on. He says, "I will do this because they forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moabites, and Molech, the god of the Ammonites, and have not walked in my ways, nor done what is right in my eyes, nor kept my statutes and laws as David, Solomon's father, did." Okay, so because David had kept those laws and had honored God, God had promised him and was going to fulfill that promise of an everlasting dynasty. But he's taking 10 of the tribes away from the son of Solomon because of that unfaithfulness. So verse 37, again, talking to Jeroboam, he says, "However, as for you, I will take you, and you will rule over all that your heart desires. You will be king over Israel." If you do whatever I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes by keeping my statutes and commands, as David my servant did, I will be with you. I will build you a dynasty as enduring as the one I built for David and will give Israel to you. Now, what kind of a promise is that? I mean, what an awesome promise to get. You know, he had made that promise to David. David had been faithful, and he's keeping his promise to David. Now he's promising to Jeroboam. So if you'll be faithful to me, I'll do the same thing for you, an everlasting, you know, a dynasty as enduring as the one I built for David. So a great promise. However, it didn't turn out that way. Okay, he didn't keep his end of the bargain. So 1 Kings 12, verse 13 says, the king. So let me just set this up. So Jeroboam comes with a bunch of people from the 10 tribes and basically comes to Rehoboam, who is the son of Solomon, who has taken, you know, the role of the king. And he says, you know, we will serve you if you will lighten the load, because Solomon was pretty rough on us. And so he consults with some older wise men. He consults with some younger friends. And he takes the advice of the younger friends, is what we're going to find here, about how to answer them. So the king answered the people harshly, verse 13. Rejecting the advice given him by the elders, he followed the advice of the young men and said, my father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for this turn of events was from the Lord, to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah the Shilonite. So here we have the kingdom is going to be divided, and it's basically because of what Solomon had done, and God decreed and decided this was going to happen. So, you know, we typically read this and we spend a good bit of time talking about, you know, he got the advice from the young guys, advice from the old guys, and he took the advice of the young guys, and that was a mistake. And yes, it was. God knew that was going to happen. God set that up. Okay, so that's kind of the point here, is that this was from the Lord. Let's take a look now at what this set in place. Hopefully, a lot of you have seen this chart before, right? When you work as long on a chart as I did on this one, it keeps coming back. You don't just leave it behind. And so, I don't know if you can see the bottom of the chart down here. What we have on the left are the kings of Israel, the 10 tribes, the northern kingdom. These are the people that broke away from Judah. And then on the left, we have the kings of Judah. So at the top, we have Jeroboam in Israel. We have Rehoboam in Judah. And then as you proceed down, you get the subsequent kings, you know, who replaced who, all the way down. So that by the bottom here is where Israel goes into Assyrian captivity. On the right over here, Judah, we have them going down into Babylonian captivity much later. All right? Now, we have some other stuff on here, some colors and things. On the bottom, I hope you can see this. On the left, it's green. This is kind of a key for the colors. It goes from green, which is good, to red, which is evil. Okay, so there's different degrees of good and good to evil in there. And if you disagree with my assessment of red versus orange, you know, make your own chart. But you know, I at least had some scriptural reasons, I thought, for doing it this way. But anyway, you also see over here the blues and the purples. The blues are prophets who prophesied during the eras of these kings. And these are the ones that prophesied to Judah. These are the ones that prophesied to Israel. Then in purple, we've got more prophets. These are the ones that actually wrote books in the Old Testament. Some of the prophets, the minor prophets, the major prophets, you know, that's who these are, the purple ones. So you can see who they were talking to when they were prophesying. And it helps you put everything kind of in context. Big picture is all we're going to do right here, right now. You notice these are all on the evil side of the scale, right? You never got a good king of the northern kingdoms. You got a couple of them that were not quite as evil as the others. And then you got some of them that are just pure evil, you know, bright red. All right. On the right, you have Judah, and you actually have a few green ones. A couple of bright green ones and some other kind of green. They're pretty good guys. We'll get to Asa next week. So we actually get to talk about one of the good ones next week. But today we're going to be talking about Jeroboam and Rehoboam, two of the on the evil side of the scale. And you notice that I've got Jeroboam as a darker orange than Rehoboam. So he's more evil than Rehoboam. We'll see the scriptures that justify that as we go along. So, of course, you know, they've pulled those 10 tribes apart. Rehoboam, you know, not having been told by God what's going on here yet, he says, okay, I got to go stop this. I got to raise this big army, and we got to see what we can do. In 1 Kings 12, starting in verse 20, it says, when all the Israelites heard that Jeroboam had returned, they sent and called him to the assembly and made him king over all Israel. Only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the house of David. When Rehoboam arrived in Jerusalem, he mustered the whole house of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 fighting men, to make war against the house of Israel and to regain the kingdom for Rehoboam, son of Solomon. So you see, Benjamin kind of gets kind of annexed in a way here. You know, they're kind of, you know, they were one of the 10 tribes, and yet they're sort of being pulled over into the Rehoboam side. So anyway, but he puts together this army. Verse 22, but this word of the God came to Shemaiah, the man of God. Say to Rehoboam, son of Solomon, king of Judah, to the whole house of Judah and to Benjamin and to the rest of the people, this is what the Lord says. Do not go up and fight against your brothers, the Israelites. Go home, every one of you, for this is my doing. So they obeyed the word of the Lord and went home again as the Lord had ordered. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable to me. You know, this is Rehoboam basically listening to the prophet, obeying the prophet, and giving up 10 tribes, not even without a fight, okay, because God said so. So, I mean, that's a good mark, okay? That's part of why he gets a lighter color of orange, all right? Okay. All right, so he listened to the man of God. Verse 24. What I want to do here is kind of bring a lesson for us today out of this. Verse 24 said, this is my doing, said the Lord, right? This is my doing. He put Jeroboam up over those 10 tribes. Now, Jeroboam turns out to not be a good guy. He was not a good king. He was orange, almost red, okay? So, but God chose him. God made a great promise to him, and he made him king. God has his own purposes for doing that, right? And he had the right to do that. Okay, a couple other passages from the Old Testament that talk about this principle. He says in Daniel 2, verse 21, talking to Nebuchadnezzar, down in that Babylonian captivity that we were talking about, he says, he changes times and seasons, talking about God. He says, he sets up kings and he deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. So God gets to set up a king. God gets to depose a king. Jeremiah 27, verse 5. This is, again, talking about when Nebuchadnezzar was getting ready to come in and take them into captivity. God says, with my great power and outstretched arm, I made the earth and its people and the animals that are on it, and I give it to anyone I please. Okay? God gives it to anyone he pleases. So, what's the point for us? You know, whether or not you like who's in a particular government office right now, God has the right to do that. He's doing it for his own reasons. It might be a good one. It might be a bad one. We don't know. God's ways are higher than our ways. So the point here is that just like Rehoboam, step back and let it happen because it was from God. We ought to have that same attitude. Okay, Jeroboam's golden calf. So how did Jeroboam? We're going to talk about Jeroboam and his failures for a little while. Okay, verse 26. Jeroboam thought to himself, the kingdom will now likely revert to the house of David. If these people go up to offer sacrifices at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, they will again give their allegiance to their lord Rehoboam, king of Judah. They will kill me and return to King Rehoboam. So what's the problem with that thinking? God had told him otherwise. Exactly. Exactly. God had made him a promise. He didn't believe that promise. He didn't trust that promise. He says, I've got to do something to make this happen. So he said, I can't let this stand. So he lacked faith in God's promise, and therefore, in verse 28, after seeking advice, the king made two golden calves. He said to the people, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." These two golden calves that I just made brought you up out of Egypt. I mean, you know, I can't comprehend how a group, a nation of people would buy that. You know, but, you know, it happened. But what happened here was that the lack of faith led to idolatry, right? It says, "I don't believe God, so I'm going to follow something else. I'm going to create something to follow, or I'm going to find something to follow." Our lack of faith can also lead to idolatry, right? You know, we might not make golden calves, but we find something else to rule our lives if we don't trust the promises of God. Okay, lack of faith leads to idolatry. So what more did Jeroboam do? Verse 31, "Jeroboam built shrines on high places and appointed priests from all sorts of people, even though they were not Levites. He instituted a festival on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the festival held in Judah, and offered sacrifices on the altar. This he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves he had made. And Bethel, he also at Bethel he also installed priests at the high places he had made." So, I mean, he's basically inventing his own religion here. He made the golden calves. He's setting up the rules. He's setting up the festivals. You know, he's, you know, building the altars and the high places. He's making sacrifices. He's inventing a religion. All right. I mean, this is why he's orange. Okay. If you think this is bad, wait till we get to the red ones. All right. All right. So he was, you know, the non-Levite priests, the high places, the festivals. And how did God feel about that? Chapter 13, verse 1. "By the word of the Lord, a man of God came from Judah to Bethel as Jeroboam was standing by the altar to make an offering. He cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord. 'O altar, altar, this is what the Lord says. A son named Josiah will be born to the house of David. On you he will sacrifice the priests of the high places who now make offerings here, and human bones will be burned on you.'" Okay, that's a prophecy to the altar. I mean, this is a pretty remarkable prophecy. He names Josiah 300 years before Josiah was born, more than 300 years. He names him, says this is the guy that's going to do it, and he tells him what's going to happen. Okay, just to show you that on the chart, here is the beginning of Jeroboam's reign is when this is happening. Where is my laser? Well, Josiah is near the bottom on the right. He's that last bright green one. And I've lost my... You see it? I don't see it. All right. But anyway, it's there. So that's just to show you, that was a lot of kings transpired. That's actually after Israel has gone into Babylonian captivity that it happens. So, but Josiah was prophesied over 300 years. Now, there's another case where God named a king and prophesied something about him hundreds of years before. Does anybody know who that king was? It was Cyrus, talking about him, you know, basically rebuilding Jerusalem, rebuilding the temple. Okay, but he named him hundreds of years before. These are big deal, big events when he does that. It's only the only two times that I know of, or I can think of. So then he goes on. So God had more to say about this. It wasn't just a prophecy against the altar. Chapter 14, verse 7. He tells the prophet, says, "Go tell Jeroboam that this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I raised you up from among the people and made you a leader over my people Israel. I tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you. But you have not been like my servant David, who kept my commands and followed me with all his heart, doing only what is right in my eyes." Okay, so he says, you didn't keep your end of the bargain. Verse 9, he says, "You have done more evil than all who lived before you. You have made for yourself other gods, idols made of metal. You have provoked me to anger and thrust me behind your back. You're worshiping these idols. You're not worshiping me. You've ignored me. You're not following the law." Verse 10, "Because of this, I am going to bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. I will cut off from Jeroboam every last male in Israel, slave or free. I will burn up the house of Jeroboam as one burns dung until it is all gone. Dogs will eat those belonging to Jeroboam who die in the city, and the birds of the air will feed on those who die in the country. I, the Lord, have spoken." How does God feel about idolatry? It's about the worst thing you can do. You know, is to go to somebody other than God and believe them over God, to worship them over, rather than God. I mean, that's about the worst thing a person can do, and especially one who has been taught about God and should know about God, right? Okay, verse 14, he says, "The Lord will raise up for himself a king over Israel who will cut off the family of Jeroboam. This is the day." What? Yes, even now. "And the Lord will strike Israel so that it will be like a reed swaying in the water. He will uproot Israel from this good land that he gave to their forefathers and scatter them beyond the river because they provoked the Lord to anger by making Asherah poles. And he will give Israel up because of the sins Jeroboam has committed and has caused Israel to commit." So here he's talking about destroying, number one, the family line of Jeroboam. We're going to see that next week. We talk about the king Baasha of Israel. Okay, that happened just a couple, you know, shortly thereafter. But then he also talks about the whole nation of Israel going into Assyrian captivity is what he's talking about. Eventually they're going to be taken beyond the river. And he says that's because of what Jeroboam did and caused them to do. Okay, basically, Jeroboam's accountable for it, but the people are accountable for following and doing that, right? So God was going to, you know, he basically made a promise here to destroy the house of Jeroboam. And, you know, just a reminder of what he had promised Jeroboam. Verse 38, he had promised him, "I will build you a dynasty as enduring as the one I built for David." Okay, instead, Jeroboam's whole family line is going to be wiped from the face of the earth. And Israel would go into captivity. So what were Jeroboam's sins? In a nutshell, you know, it was idolatry, the golden calves, it was the Asherah poles, it was the non-Levite priests, it was the high places, it was the festivals, it was the abandoning of the law, right? And you know, basically from the very beginning, no intention to ever really follow the law. And because of that, he was destroyed. So let's talk now about Rehoboam, the other side of the chart. Verse 21, "Rehoboam, son of Solomon, was king in Judah. He was 41 years old when he became king, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city the Lord had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel in which to put his name. His mother's name was Naamah. She was an Ammonite." So verse 13, basically what was happening here, he became king. This is in 2 Chronicles, excuse me. So what you have is 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles have sort of parallel accounts, but the Chronicles fills in some gaps. So I wanted to look at a few things it brings in here. It says in 2 Chronicles 11, verse 13, "The priests and Levites from all their districts throughout Israel sided with him, with Rehoboam. The Levites even abandoned their pasture lands and property and came to Judah and to Jerusalem because Jeroboam and his sons had rejected them as priests of the Lord." So a lot of the Levites that were scattered around in the 10 tribes came to Jerusalem because at least in Jerusalem there is a pretense of trying to follow the law. Okay. Then in verse 16, 2 Chronicles 11, 16, "Those from every tribe of Israel," this is non-Levites, "those from every tribe of Israel who set their hearts on seeking the Lord, the God of Israel, followed the Levites to Jerusalem to offer sacrifices to the Lord, the God of their fathers. They strengthened the kingdom of Judah and supported Rehoboam, son of Solomon, 3 years, walking in the ways of David and Solomon during this time." So we had a three-year period at the beginning of Rehoboam's reign where they were following the law. There was 3 good years, okay? So they were walking in the ways of David and Solomon during this time. So that didn't last. So in 2 Chronicles 12, verse 1, says, "After Rehoboam's position as king was established and he had become strong, he and all Israel with him abandoned the law of the Lord." Tragic words. Because they had been unfaithful to the Lord, Shishak, king of Egypt, attacked Jerusalem in the fifth year of King Rehoboam. So here we are up to 5 years. He had 3 good years, then he had a couple of bad years, and God sends in a conquering king. All right. So let's go back into 1 Kings and pick up the account there. 1 Kings 14, verse 22. Judah did evil in the eyes of the Lord. By the sins they committed, they stirred up his jealous anger more than their fathers had done. They also set up for themselves high places, sacred stones, and Asherah poles on every high hill and under every spreading tree. There were evil male shrine prostitutes in the land. The people engaged in all the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. So they were basically, you know, running helter-skelter into idolatry too. Verse 5, 2 Chronicles again, back to 2 Chronicles 12, verse 5. Then the prophet Shemaiah came to Rehoboam and to the leaders of Judah who had assembled in Jerusalem for fear of Shishak, and he said to them, "This is what the Lord says, you have abandoned me, therefore I now abandon you to Shishak." Okay, now how did they respond to that? Verse 6, the leaders of Israel and the king humbled themselves and said, "The Lord is just." When the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, this word of the Lord came to Shemaiah. "Since they have humbled themselves, I will not destroy them, but will soon give them deliverance. My wrath will not be poured out on Jerusalem through Shishak. They will, however, become subject to him, so that they may learn the difference between serving me and serving the kings of other lands." So God respected their humility, their humbling themselves. But he still punished them, okay? But he did not destroy them because they humbled themselves. Okay. 2 Chronicles 12:12. "Because Rehoboam humbled himself, the Lord's anger turned away from him. He did not totally destroy. Indeed, there was some good in Judah." So more justification for the lighter shade of orange, right? Okay, there was some good in Judah. Okay. But in 2 Chronicles 12:14, he says he did evil because he had not set his heart on seeking the Lord. Set your heart on seeking the Lord. You know, that's the lesson here. You don't want to be orange. You don't want to be any of those shades of orange. You want to be green, right? So you want to set your heart on seeking the Lord. Okay. 1 Kings 14, verse 30. "There was continual warfare between Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and Rehoboam rested with his fathers and was buried with him in the city of David. His mother's name was Naamah. She was an Ammonite, and Abijah, his son, succeeded him as king." So we'll be talking about Abijah next week. But what were the sins in Judah under Rehoboam? They abandoned the law. They had the high places, the sacred stones, the Asherah poles, the shrine prostitutes. In a lot of ways, it's the same list as under Jeroboam, right? Okay, it's orange. It's not good stuff. But they did humble themselves towards the end. They did have 3 good years. There are some good things. There was some good in Judah. This was their sin under Rehoboam. Okay. And it says that after Rehoboam's position was strengthened, he and all Israel abandoned the law of the Lord. So how does that compare with what God commanded in Deuteronomy for the kings? Deuteronomy 17. I'll pick up especially in verse 19. He wanted them to read the words of the law every day of their life so that they would learn to revere the Lord his God. The king would learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees. And yet they abandoned the law of the Lord, right? So had they done what the law called for, then they would not have had Shishak. They would not have had all those idols. They would have understood God, and they would have followed God. And that was their failure. So, let me see if I think my laser is dead. So at any rate, the Sherry, if you'd flip to the... Flip. There, okay. So here we are. We've talked about Jeroboam at the top. We've talked about Rehoboam at the top. What we'll be doing next week, we'll continue down the list. Nadab and Baasha and Elah and Zimri. You see these little skinny, It's never a good sign when you're one of these little skinny little color bands, or even some of them are just a little black line because you couldn't get one that small. One of these guys was actually king for 7 days. So, you know, this is a bad list. We're going to end up with Omri next week on the left, and we'll end up with Asa on the right. So, where is the button? Is that it? Oh, yes. Okay. So, yay. Okay. Jeroboam, we'll be doing down through Omri right here, all right, next week. Omri is a bright red one. And then we'll be talking about Abijah. He's a little skinny one. That's a clue. And then we'll go into Asa. There's a lot of good things to say about Asa. Not perfect, but a good king. So that's our plan for next week. And then after that, we'll be going back to Jeff for subsequent kings. And then after Jeff will have, I think, 2 weeks. And then Harold will come back and talk to us basically about Elisha and the kings that were kings during his reign. So that is the class for today. Please go find your kids and bring them back for worship.